Thanks, Jacob. Well, it's good to be here with everybody this afternoon. It's good to see some familiar faces that I haven't seen in quite a while, and even some former students that are now productively employed. So glad to know a few things that I did worked out okay. But Jacob did invite me to talk to you a little bit about smart financial planning. And, you know, there's nothing like an economist quite to follow up the great presentation that we just had just a few minutes ago. I've known Kevin and Lydia for quite some time, and I've never heard their story. And that's a very compelling story, and it's a really great one. And hopefully what I can do this afternoon is give you a little framework, kind of give you some textbook things to go by, if you will, in terms of laying out a plan. And as I was thinking about this, what my hope for this afternoon is to not be like something that happened several years ago before we had smartphones and GPS technology and all of that. But anyway, there was this guy in one of these larger cities, and he was actually giving a helicopter tour around the city. And somehow or another, the guy got lost. And so he had this person in there, and they cozied up to the side of this building, and he said, "Hey, write down on this notepad, where are we?" And so the guy wrote it on a notepad, stuck it up on the side of the window like you've seen people do before. And he stuck it up there, and the person in the building scribbled something, put it on the window, and said, "You're in a helicopter." Pilot said, "Thanks, I got it." He said, so his passenger with him said, "Where are we?" He said, "Oh, that's easy." He said, "This is the Microsoft technical support building." He said, "How do you know that?" He said, "Well, I asked him a very simple question. He gave me a technically correct and completely useless answer. And so now I know where I am." So hopefully what I will give you this afternoon will be some things to think about in terms of financial planning, laying out the roadmap for the future. Okay, so if it's okay, I'm going to move around a little bit. I don't get to do this very often, so I'm going to have to move around some. But as we talk about a business plan, there are really two things that you're going to try to do with the business plan, because the question is always going to come up. If you go to a lender or you go to someone and you're going to borrow money, they're going to want a business plan, right? And I can't tell you how many people have called an agent, called me and said, "Look, I've got to have a business plan for whatever it is that I'm going to do." And I've done them fair to finish operations to people wanting to get in the honeybee business. And they're all laid out essentially the same, okay? So there's two things that you're going to do. You're going to help guide your team in making decisions about what it is that you want to do. And then the other thing is that's going to be what you're going to use to get money from people. Because, right, money is what makes things happen in this world. So those are going to be the two main things that you want to do with a business plan. Okay, and so you want to start there. But before you do, here's some things that I want you to think about, because most of you are either in the cattle business or some version of it, or you want to get into it. And everybody has an idea about what they want to do. So before you get into that, here's some things that I want to lay out for you to keep in mind as you go forward. And that is, long term, the price of a commodity is going to be the average cost of production. Okay, so if you're producing a commodity, and we'll try not to get too technical here, but a commodity is where it doesn't matter who you buy it from, the products are all the same. Okay, over the long term, the price of that commodity is going to be what the cost of production is. So if you're going to make any money in that, what are you going to have to do? You're going to have to do it cheaper, right? That's that low-cost producer part that we always hear about. And so this discussion that I'm having this afternoon with all of you, I'm assuming that the reason that you're doing this is because you want to make money. If there are other reasons, and there are lots of other reasons to be in business, to be in the cattle business especially, but what we're going to start with this afternoon is assuming that you're wanting to make money. Okay, so long term is going to approach the average cost of production, and if there's a reason why someone is not doing whatever it is, this new product, this new production system, it may not always be a good reason. Maybe they have not thought about it. But if you're coming up with a new approach, a new product, a new whatever, at least think about why isn't everybody else doing it? Not that all the good ideas have already been used up, but sometimes there's a reason that folks don't do things. The other thing, and this applies especially as we talk about a lot of these niche products, because some of us were talking earlier about grass-fed beef, local beef, some of those kinds of things. And, you know, for years people said, well, you can't make any money at it. And my approach has always been, and one of the things that I think that we're seeing nowadays is anything can be profitable if you charge enough. And it sounds fairly simple, and it might even be cliche, but if you know what some of these people are spending for some of these different products, we've come to see that, and people will spend a lot more on food products than many of us ever thought about spending. And one of the last things that I'll mention is your best marketing plan is going to begin with your cost of production. Remember, that's why I said that you've got to know the long term, the price of that commodity is going to be the cost of production. So you've got to know that. And the last thing that I'll mention, especially as we talk about financial plans, business plans, is many times I've had a lot of lenders tell me this over my 20-something years in the business, that when they make a loan, most of the time it's more about the person than it is the plan. So some of those things that Kevin and Lydia were telling you all ago about paying attention to detail, and people are always watching, the lenders are watching, the neighbors know, and a lot of times if there's a decision, if maybe there's a marginal decision, but they know that you've always paid your bills on time, or you've made all the efforts, or you have, you come from a good working family, or you have a good standing in the community, that's probably going to be one of the most important things that's going to help you get that financing, at least the first time. Okay, two main things that if you're going to an investor, a lender, whoever it is, they want to know two things. Is it going to make money, and are you going to pay them back? And really, the main thing they're interested in is, are you going to pay them back? Okay, because if it doesn't make money, you just need to have some off-farm income from somewhere in order to pay them back. But these are the two questions that as you're putting together your business plan, you need to know. So you need to show that it will make money and that you can pay them back. And when I say that you need to show that it'll make money, one of the best things that you can do is actually go through the exercise, be objective when you're putting the plan together, and see if it'll make money. Because it's a lot better to lose money on a piece of paper than it is to go get financed and then find out that it won't make money. Okay, so will you pay them back? How much do they want? All right, there are several things as we talk about a business plan. And one of the things that I want you to keep in mind as we're talking about this today, this is at least two, if not three, college courses that you're getting in the space of 45 minutes or less. So we're going to kind of go through this and hopefully generate some questions for you. But you're going to have a business description, and as part of that, you're going to have some goals. You're going to have a mission statement, and we'll talk about those things in a minute. You're going to have a production plan. And then you're going to have a financial plan, and that's where we'll spend most of our time this afternoon, is talking about the financial plan and all the parts that go into a financial plan. You're going to have a marketing plan. Hopefully you'll have a marketing plan. And then you're going to have a risk management plan, because there are all types of risks that you're going to deal with. We deal with production risk. We deal with price risk. We deal with legal issues. We deal with help not showing up when they're supposed to show up. All of those types of risks are things that you're going to deal with, and you need to have a plan for all of those. My wife and I have been married 24 years, and over the past 4 or 5, she's finally gotten to the point now to where she's the one asking all the what-if questions, because she's lived with me for so long, wanting to know what happens when something blows up, or telling her why it won't work. So if you live with somebody long enough, it'll get there. All right. Now, I will give you a lot of different things to talk about this afternoon as we're going through the financial plan, putting together a business plan. Most people want to know, is there somewhere I can go to that has a template? The best template that I have seen by far is this thing right here called AgPlan. It's through the Center for Farm Financial Management at the University of Minnesota. How many of you in here have ever seen this plan, seen this? Okay? One. All right. If you have to do a business plan, I would suggest that you start here. It's real easy. You go to this website and you create a username. It's like everything else. You have a username and a password. And then you can start building your own plan. And all of the questions, that general framework that I gave you today, it'll be online and it will guide you through that. You'll click on it. It'll ask you about your mission statement. It'll ask you about goals and objectives. It'll ask you about your production plan. And all those little items that I had listed up there, it will ask you about those. It will explain them. And it will give you a list of resources of where you can get more information. One of the great things about this is it asks you the questions, and then you can type them up. You can either type them in there online, or you can type them up in a Word document. WordPerfect for some of those older ones, some of you older ones in here. You can copy, paste it in there. You can put pictures in there. If you want to scan a copy of the farm plat or map, you can upload that. You can put it in there, and then and it saves it automatically. And then when you're all said and done and you get ready to go, you can print it, and it'll put it in a document for you. And it can be 3 to 30 pages. But when you get through, you have a business plan. And if you've answered, one of the things that's really helpful is as you're going through there, it will ask you questions that you may not have thought about. Okay, so let's talk just a little bit about what we're doing here. And the first one is the business description. All right, most people know, or most people have heard about a mission statement. Okay, the main thing that when we're talking about on this mission statement is, what are we doing here? What are we trying to do with this business? Are we in the registered business? Are we trying to produce commercial cattle? Are we trying to raise replacement heifers? This is where, this is what, if someone were to walk up to you and say, what are you doing with this farm? You're able to tell them in two to three sentences, okay? This is what we are and what we're about on this farm. And the other thing that's going to be part of this overall description is to have some goals. How many of you have heard of SMART goals? Okay, a few of you have. Okay, if you're not familiar with SMART goals, they are specific. They are measurable, because if you can't put a number on it, if there's not a number there, then we can't, a lot of you have heard, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. Okay, so that's one of the things about a SMART goal is it's measurable, it's attainable, it's rewarding, that means it's worth doing, and it has a time element. Because we all know if somebody gives you something to do and there's no timeline, there's no deadline, when does it get done? Never. Okay, so it has to have a time element with it as well. So some examples of these might be that in 5 to 10 years we want to be selling 100 cows, 100 bred cows, or 50 replacement heifers. Or I want to be averaging selling bulls for a certain price in so many years. Okay, there's a time element. We're specific about our numbers. Because once you put numbers in it, then that should drive your plan. Okay, so hopefully all of this should work together for you. If your intent is to have this to be where it's either contributing to household income or doing this for a living, then you need to know by a certain day about how much. Now, certainly these things may change. You know, things happen. But if we don't have it specific and we don't have a time element to it, then it won't ever get done. Maybe we could have it paid off in 10 years, 15 years. You know, I know some people, you do the same with a house or with consumer debt. You know, within 3 years, we want all our credit cards paid off, or we want our house paid off in 15 years. You can do the same thing here. One of the other things, and I've encountered this especially with dairy farmers and some other people, maybe sometimes it's not about the money. Maybe it's about a life issue or a life, what do they call it, the life-work balance. Okay, maybe we're making plenty of money or we're fully occupied, but we want to watch kids play some baseball. You know, I want to be able to take some time off. So all of these are SMART goals for this year. All right, So let's talk about building the plan now for the next several minutes. We'll cover a lot of different things in here, but if you will, I want you to remember the three P's of a sustainable plan. We hear a lot about sustainability, and that term gets thrown around a lot. But if we're talking about a sustainable plan, there are three P's. All right, it's profitable. There are payments. You can make your payments. And your financial position is improved over time. All right, so think about profitability, payments, and position. All right, those are the three P's of any sustainable plan. When we're talking about profitability, is it going to be profitable in the long run? Liquidity means, can I pay my bills every year? And then finally, solvency is the financial term or the economic term that we use, the financial term. But that just describes our financial position, solvency. All right, so if you look up here, and this I used this one chart here to illustrate. We have these Cal-CAF returns over time going back to 1988 up through last year versus the cattle inventory. And you can see that we had these several years here. We had these two or three good years here back in 14, 15. And then the well went dry, and we all know what happened in 15 and 16. So one of the things that I want you to remember, and one of the things that we really had to encourage people about several years ago, was don't base your financial plans on the prices that we had in 14, 13, and 14. You're probably going to be needing to look at something more along the lines of an average price over the past 5 to 10 years, as opposed to those really high years. So when you're building those financial plans, those are one of the things that you need to think about. One of the other things that I want to mention here is we hear about net returns and we hear about profits. And there are a lot of people that define those two terms a lot of different ways. Okay, but what we're going to talk about in a minute, profits and what that term actually means. When we're talking about profitability, these are the things that are going to be involved, and they're going to be things like enterprise budgets. It could be a whole farm budget. Once you get going over time, you can have an accrual adjusted income statement. Part of our profitability there are going to include those operating expenses. Those are going to be those out-of-pocket expenses, things like feed, seed, fertilizer, chemicals, fuel, labor. Those variable costs or those operating items, you're going to have that included in the budget. You're also going to have fixed costs in there. And there are actually two different levels, two different time periods for fixed costs. We have intermediate, which are going to be things like breeding stock. Sometimes fences get thrown in there. And then we're also going to have those long-term assets, real estate, buildings, those kinds of things. One of the things that I want you to keep in mind as you see up here about the fixed cost, when we're talking about economic depreciation, not tax depreciation, do y'all know the difference? There's a lot of difference, okay? Economic depreciation is the loss in value that you have each year from just the loss of use, something wearing out, the obsolescence of the technology, okay? Tax depreciation, a lot of time, tax depreciation is what Uncle Sam allows you to take off on your taxes. And most of the time, the tax depreciation is going to be much more aggressive. You're going to take a lot more depreciation, at least on the first few years that you purchase something, using the tax method as opposed to the economic depreciation. Okay? The example that I would give might be if you purchase a tractor, this is a real easy one. You purchase a tractor, if you go by the tax rules, you can depreciate that thing out in 3 or 4 years. And I think it'll go up to, 7 if you're depreciating a tractor. But the reality is, if you take care of a tractor, how long will that thing last you? It'll last a long time, right? Same for fences and same for a lot of other things. Okay, so you need to account for depreciation in there. And that is one of the things that is really hard for a lot of people to keep in, to remember, is that once something gets depreciated out on their taxes, you still need to be keeping that money back each year. You need to be allowing a certain amount of money each year to replace that, because eventually chutes and facilities and fences do wear out. So we have those intermediate assets, long-term assets, and then an economic budget is also going to give you a charge, or will include a charge, for your time and your management. Okay, and so if you are the owner-operator, there actually, your time and effort will actually show up in two different places. First will show up in labor. That is, what are you doing that anybody else could do? Driving a tractor, running a hay baler, working cows, you can go hire people to do that. The management charge is where you're actually making a decision. All right, which bulls do we use? When do we move them from this pasture to that pasture? Things that that involve a decision, that includes a management charge, and that is what you hopefully are getting paid for, not just how well you can fix fence, but what kind of decision you can make. Some people call that being an entrepreneur, okay? So that's that managerial charge there. Okay, there are actually two different types of profitability that a lot of people will talk about. And we talk about economic profits and we talk about financial profits. If we're talking about something being truly sustainable, over time, it will generate positive economic profits, or they will at least break even. Okay, because if you're breaking even from an economic standpoint, and you can see all these examples in here, that means you have paid a return to the land. Even if the land's paid for, you've paid yourself for what you could have rented it for. If you are paying yourself, you're paying yourself a salary and some kind of management charge for the capital that you've put at risk, as well as for those decisions that you've made in there. And when you start thinking about ways to value different things, if you're thinking about raising hay and feeding that through your cattle operation, you're going to include the opportunity cost. That's where economists, you know, people always get onto us for using opportunity cost. That's an economic concept. What could I have sold that for? On the financial side of things, if you're looking at financial profits, that's going to be something that's going to show up more in a cash flow type statement. But these financial profits here are actually, what did it cost you? Okay? And there's also going to be some standardization here, especially on things like breeding stock replacement, that's going to use either generally accepted accounting principles or the guidelines from the Farm Financial Standards Council. If anybody's interested in here, there's about a 150-page document that will show you the correct way to calculate replacement cost on breeding heifers and all the different ways, all the different financial measures that we utilize on the farm, and it's available through the Farm Financial Standards Council. From an economic standpoint, that operating capital is going to be valued at what you could have invested that money in. So, in other words, the money that you put in the farm, what could you have invested that in, the return that you could have received if you had invested in a similar venture of similar risk. Okay, try not to get this too busy, but I think a lot of you have seen these before. This is actually the 50-cow budget, I think, for North Georgia this year that the Department of Ag and Applied Economics put out here. And you can see that in the variable cost side of this thing, there are things like pasture, feed, salt minerals, vet mess, and all those kinds of things. We come up with a total number, and then we break it down to a dollars per cow and a dollars per hundredweight number. Okay, so it's very important that you have all of those, because it's important to compare that to whatever the long-term price is that you're expecting to pay, and how does this cost compare to that price that you're expecting to receive over time. Why don't we put in the difference in dollars? Why don't we put in dollars per cow and dollars per hundredweight? You know, most of the time, when somebody calls and asks for a cow budget, or they ask for a beef cow number, they want to know, how much does it cost to run a cow per year? Some cows aren't all the same. Everybody that has 100% calf rate, raise your hand, please. Nobody that I know of has 100% calf crop percentage. They're all different. So the dollars per cow number is a good place to start, but it's not entirely meaningless, but it doesn't mean as much as a lot of people think it means, because you have to capture things in there. What do you sell? Do you sell cows? If you're in the commercial cow-calf business, you sell calves, but what is the, you sell pounds, okay? So we've got to get it at the dollars per hundredweight. Now, if you're looking at getting in the registered business, the seed stock business, whatever, you need to get this cost of production down to whatever the unit price is you're selling. So if you're selling on, if your value or your price is going to be based on dollars per head, then that's what you need to go to. If you're going to be selling pounds, that's the number that you need there as well. And one of the things about a budget is, once you go through these, especially a lot of these electronic budgets, they're going to take into consideration things like your calf crop percentage, the percentage, your weaning percentage, weaning weights, all those kinds of things. If you're looking at, then it breaks it down into a fixed cost section. And this goes to what you were talking about earlier, Lydia, about it's hard for somebody to get in farming, especially the cattle business, and start from scratch. And a lot of times, if you look at these budgets, what they're assuming is you start with nothing. And if you go invest, this is what it's going to take you to start from scratch and get set up in this operation. Now, sometimes they'll just assume that you're starting with 50% because you have something to begin with. But if you're breaking this down, these are your costs. These are your total fixed costs there, and you can see things like taxes and insurance and depreciation and interest. And then finally, you're going to get at a total cost number. Okay, now, if you look at that number and you see that the break even to cover everything this year on a 500 pound calf is $1.75 or $1.75, is this a profitable venture? Not this year. A couple of years, maybe. Okay? So, one of the things then a person hopefully would look at would be either, are my costs too high, or what can I do differently to get a higher value for these calves? Okay? And there are a lot of things that you can change, either from a marketing perspective or from a production perspective, to change these. The main point that I want you to get at, to think about here, though, is that a budget is going to show you what happens long term, and it needs to reflect those costs. Even though you may not be buying panels or fencing or whatever every year, you're allowing for that replacement and you're holding that money back so that when the time comes, you can. All right, if you're looking at financial efficiency, this is just one of the little measures that you want to look at. You have an asset turnover, which tells us how fast, how well we're utilizing these assets. Basically, it's the value how efficient we are, and then this operating expense, depreciation, interest expense, and the net income from operations, basically, out of every dollar we generate, where does it go? All right, so we talked about profitability. The other thing to mention is, as part of your financial plan, is can you make your payments? Will it cash flow? And that's what a lot of people are interested in. But for a plan to be truly sustainable, it's got to be profitable over the long term, then it also has to cash flow. And we've seen that you see it a lot in livestock operations especially. It may be profitable over time, but you have to borrow so much money on the front end that you can never get the thing to cash flow. So this is something that's important. The two main questions that you need to answer then are, once you get up and running, you get at full production, how long will it take you before you can pay your bills, or will you be able to pay your bills? And then how long is it going to take you to get there? Okay, one of the things about a cash flow, which is different, is this is all the cash inflows and outflows. So we don't include things like depreciation, but we are going to include things like principal, interest, family living expense, if you're taking money out of the operation, those kinds of things. So it's going to reflect an owner's draw, not necessarily a management fee. If you are preparing this, your cash flow to begin with, you have to have it on an annual basis. I would say for the first 5 to 10 years. Okay, you have to have it on an annual basis. It would be nice if you could do it on a monthly basis, but I really think if you can break it down to a 2-month period or a quarterly period is what you're looking at. And when you're doing that, the things that you're going to be, you have to sit down and think about, if I'm starting from scratch, when am I going to build my fence? How much is that going to cost me? How many cows am I going to buy? How much are they going to cost me? When will my first calf crop be sold? And if we're going to hold heifers out of that calf crop, you know, all of those are the things that you have to include in there. That's going to help you determine two things: how much operating capital you have, how much operating capital you will need, and how much investment capital you'll need, because the terms for those two will be different. One of the main things that you have to have right here are your operations assumption. Okay? So if you put together a cash flow and you're going to buy 50 cows and you're going to sell 50 500-pound calves the first year, it's not realistic. And that's one of the things that most of the time somebody puts together a cash flow projection, that's where the thing falls apart. Is usually they will underestimate expenses and they'll overestimate their revenue. So you have to be realistic about your operations here, and then how long before you can really start making payments. Most of the time, if you put together a cash flow and you show yourself making the payments the first year, and this is somebody just starting out now. If this is a new venture and you have some resources, that's one thing. But for somebody starting out, if you show yourself making your payments the first year, you probably did it wrong, okay? Because most of the time, you're looking at a minimum of 2 years. On the other hand, if you're looking at year seven before the thing cash flows, then there's probably an issue there as well, unless it's something like a vineyard or a pecan orchard or something. So it most likely it's going to be somewhere in that 3 to 7 year time period before the thing actually cash flows. To give an example of what this looks like, I actually went back and pulled something out of a feasibility study we had done several years ago for not a cattle operation, but it shows the same thing. The line here are these, the bars down here on the bottom are actually what we would call the net accumulated cash flow. That is, all the money you dumped in the thing to start with, how long is it before you actually get all of your money back out of it from a net income standpoint? And in this particular situation, it was somewhere between year 4 and year 5 before they actually started generating a positive accumulated cash flow. But it was really about year 3 before they actually started making their payments. So that's a fairly realistic plan, because that first year you have things like cows and fences and land acquisition and all those kinds of things that go into play there. So that's something that they're going to be looking for from a cash flow standpoint, from a solvency standpoint, or from a financial position standpoint. We call them balance sheets. Some people call them financial statements. That thing should be improving over time. Now, there may be some fluctuations in there from year to year, but over time, that financial statement should be improving. There are a lot of measures there, but the main one that I will focus on for you to look at is that debt-to-asset ratio. That is how much you own, the percentage or the ratio of what you own versus what you owe. And if you're young, starting out, it's going to be close to 100%. But over time, that number should be declining. Now, there are also some other measures in there, debt-to-equity, equity-to-asset. But realistically, I think you're probably looking at year 4 or 5 before you see much appreciable improvement in your financial position. Now, one of the things, I'll stop just a second to mention, that we're talking about projections, but one of the things that I hope you'll do is over time, each year you'll actually sit down and go through this exercise to see where you are at the end of each year. Prepare a projected cash flow for this coming year, as well as an anticipated balance sheet. These are just some goals to shoot for. And again, I know the audience is very diverse in here in terms of where you're starting, what you're looking at. But I think probably what you ought to be trying to shoot for, return on assets of somewhere around 5% or a little better. Hopefully those economic profits are going to be break even or more. And that's where you're actually paying yourself for the value of your labor and management. A current ratio, which is those current bills are the amount of money and cash and disposable income or liquid assets that you have on hand divided by your operating expenses, or not your operating expenses, your current debts, things like the little bill that you've got at the parts house and your feed bill and those kinds of things. That number should be about 1.5. So you should have about 1.5 times liquid assets on hand as you have short-term debt. I think a good goal to be working toward is to have enough working capital that if something happens, you can finance the ranch or the farm for a year. Not everybody can get there, and it may take you a long time, but I think that's certainly a goal to shoot for. As we talked about these operating expenses and depreciation expenses, all these numbers are going to add up to 100%, and the less money you spend here is going to be more money that you have for net income. Okay, a couple of things on financing, and Kevin did a real good job of introducing this, and I'll take just a couple of minutes to go over this. We can talk about conventional loans, and that's going to be either available through your local bank, some of these commercial banks. My guess is that most of you in here probably aren't going to be starting out with a level where you can go to someone like Rabobank or somewhere like that where we're talking about millions and millions of dollars. But most of the time, your local banks, some of the regional banks, the farm credit system, you know, whether that's farm credit, federal land bank, depending on what it is that you're going to be financing. The non-USDA possibilities, the FSA possibilities, the reason I mention that is because FSA, Farm Service Agency, actually has quite a few loan opportunities for people. Through the EQIP program, depending on your state and what those priorities there, you can actually get some cost share assistance, some matching there for things like fencing, watering, pasture improvement, those things that fit into environmental quality. And there are actually are quite a few of those that are very beneficial to us on our cattle operations. Your local or your state Soil and Water Conservation Commission, you probably have different names for different states. But sometimes there's some grant dollars, or there's some cost share assistance through those. Most of the time it's going to have to do with soil, like I mentioned, soil and water quality. But really that covers a lot of the things that we do. Also, some of your state Department of Natural Resources or Department of Environmental Quality or whatever the name it is in your particular state, sometimes there's some opportunities from those as well. As we talk about FSA, the Farm Service Agency, of course, they have the guaranteed farm loans that I would imagine most of you are familiar with. If you're not, this is where the bank, actually a local bank, will make you a loan, and then the bank has an agreement with FSA that FSA will guarantee 95% of the loan. And so that's a lot of times for a lot of our younger producers or someone that's had a tough year, that's where the FSA comes in, is they're actually a guarantor for the bank. So the bank makes the decision to loan you the money, and then they work out the deal with FSA. They also have quite a few direct loans, and that could be for operating. Micro loans are typically, I think they're $50,000 or less. That could be for someone that's wanting to do a niche business or a real small operation. Farm ownership loans, land contract loans, this is something that I think is fairly new. At least I haven't seen it over the last several years, where if there is someone like Kevin was describing earlier that wants to get out of the business or they're wanting to transition and you're someone that's wanting to get into the business and y'all actually have a contract on that land changing hands and it's going to stay in the farm, Farm Service Agency actually has a loan program there to make sure that that's happening. So if that can occur, they have their Beginning Farmer and Rancher program. The Women and Minorities program, there are quite a few minorities that are on the list. I mean, we've got Black, Hispanic, Alaskan American, Native American. I forget, there are quite a few there. But there's also a situation to where if the wife is a significant part of the operation and is willing to sign the document, then there are actually some special financing opportunities available for the women and minorities. And I've actually worked on several of those when I started my career with people that were getting started, you know, and it truly was a husband and wife partnership the loan was actually made in the wife's name because the financing was much more favorable for her than it was for him. So you have those women, minority, and also they actually have conservation loans as well, especially if you're trying to redo pastures, sow something down in permanent pastures. One of the things that I will mention is on all of these direct loans, the issue that you will run into on the direct loans is that is money that is appropriated by Congress. And so that's a finite amount of money. The guaranteed loan is not necessarily unlimited, but it's a much larger pool because they're not actually spending the money except on the loans that go bad. So the direct loans, there may be a little competition, or you may have to be there at the right time to get those, but those are some opportunities there for you. The last thing that I'll mention is Kevin and Lydia mentioned the private financing. That can come from family, friends. If it goes bad, those are future enemies. You know, a lot of people, the first thing they think about is borrowing money from their family and friends, and that everything goes well as long as everybody's getting paid. But when the problems arise, then you have to think about what's going to happen. So there are some people that will do that. There are investors. There are some people that want to be in the cow business. They just don't want to fool with cows. And so sometimes they have some money that they're willing to loan you. There's also one of the things that we talked some about. We've all heard about sweat equity, and you heard before the example about, you know, trading labor, bartering labor and equipment, those kinds of things. There's always the lease purchase, the share rental. You find a person that has cows right now, but in 5 years they want to be getting rid of them, or they don't want to. They really can, or they don't want to fool with them right now, but they don't want to get rid of them. So maybe for a young person, you start coming there and you provide the labor. You look after the cows. Maybe you provide a part of the feed. And in exchange for that, you either get a percentage of the calf crop, and then you have to work out whether you want to take those as heifers, how you want to take that. That a lot of times that is a really, really good way for a young person to get in the business without owing a lot of money. And there are all kinds of aids out there to do that. And what is an equitable or fair agreement? A lot of those publications will help you out on that because it's something that really you need to take a look at because every situation is different. Renting pasture as well as equipment. So I'm going to end up with, I know a lot of you, if you've seen a lot of my presentations, I don't have nearly the pictures in there and the graphs and the charts that you're used to seeing, but I think on something like this, hopefully it's been useful to you. Just think about the reasons that you have that plan there to guide you on the management part of that as well to show your investors, hey, this thing will make money. Remember the three P's when you're putting together that financial plan: profitability, payments, position. What's that doing to you over time? We talked about several of those things. And look farther than just your local bank. I think a lot of people are familiar with FSA and maybe their guaranteed loan, but there are a lot of other opportunities out there. And much of that depends on your state as well. So, I don't know, where's Jacob? Jacob, do we have time for questions? Okay.